Kevin, that's obviously a story that's just coming down. It's big news. We know the NBA Players Association sent out a note to see if they want to play or not. Like, I get the sense that the majority is going to rule here, and it's going to be yes for the players wanting to play. Do you see the NBA finishing the regular season, then going to playoffs, having an expanded playoffs potentially? What are the options on the table for the association?
I mean, I'm somebody who's likely to put the brakes on the optimism. I think absolutely. We knew everybody wanted to play, right? Every dollar that's recovered in revenue gets split between owners and players. There is mutual interest, which is helpful because you have a lot of things still to work out, right? What is compensation going to look like? There's a sense, obviously, that the CBA is going, I'm sorry, the collective bargaining agreement, which governs all the finances of the league, how the teams split revenue, et cetera, that's going to need to be rewritten. Well, when you get to the table, things might get a little, just because everybody wants to come back, and we're seeing that in baseball, doesn't necessarily mean it's just, here, sign here. You still have the issue. All those training facilities are opening up, and that's great. But right now, what you are allowed to do, essentially, is have a player and one player, one coach at a time. The coach wears gloves and a mask and is basically a glorified shagger of rebounds. Players are not at a point where they're going to be guarding each other in the post. There's nothing approximating five-on-five play. And so I think, you know, we're still a ways. I think the optimism is great. We still haven't figured out this bubble campus environment type arrangement. I mean, there's still a lot of stuff to do. And listen, it's an image-conscious league. Adam Silver has prided himself on this as a progressive, thoughtful, data-driven, international, global league. And I, you know, if indeed things turn a little bit and there's a second wave that certain virologists talk about, you know, Silver's not going to want to be the league that flouts best practices and best science. I don't think there's a lot of tolerance or stomach for being the NBA, being portrayed by anybody as well, they're being a little reckless. So I still think there's a sense, and that doesn't even address the thing of testing, right? So, yes, first responders in Orlando where this would happen are tested. But what happens when the narrative becomes, wait, school teachers in Detroit, firefighters in San Francisco, wherever it is, these people can't get tested. But thank God 400 players are able to at will every 3 days so that they can play basketball. Meanwhile, the rest of us don't have jobs. We're not recovering our revenue. So I do think there's still considerations. I think the needle has moved certainly toward the end of the gauge that says there'll be basketball. I don't think there'll be regular season basketball. I think they want to get the 4-4-4-4. I think a full playoff bracket because, listen, those are the broadcasts that really entice advertisers. That's where the money is really made. And you also have this other problem, guys, which is some teams are going to lose more than the others. And how does revenue get divided? 30 billionaires arguing amongst themselves over money is something that can be both time-consuming and contentious.
Kevin, you know, all the big guns had a virtual meeting, including LeBron James and Kawhi Leonard, you know, and strongly supporting a return. Is that even needed at this point by the league to hear that those guys want to play?
Yeah, I do think it does, though, because, listen, the players, and again, baseball's been instructive this week. You know, the players at any point can say, we're not risking our health. Right, and you can't really answer that if you're the owners or you're the commissioner, right? If the players aren't comfortable or feel like their health is at risk, you know, they do need the players' blessings. Also, they need the blessings, not just, hey, we want to get on the court, but we want to work out this CBA. I mean, I still think there are major hurdles. Look, I hope they're minor hurdles. I hope they're medium-sized hurdles. But, you know, we haven't talked money yet. And my understanding in sort of a capitalist system is when you start talking money, things get a little dicey. And everyone's going to lose a little bit, and you're going to have people arguing about who loses the most or who doesn't get to recover the least, rather. So, you know, I'm optimistic in that respect. I do think the common – everybody on the same page, everybody wants to do this is great. You know, these concerns, well, players might, younger guys might sneak out to Vegas or whatever it is, those concerns have been put to sleep. But I do think they haven't argued over money yet, and that always seems to be the real sticky point.
Kevin Arnovitz joins us, and that, of course, finances will be the big one. And you know, the NBA has a a much better TV deal than the NHL has, and I think the potential of lost revenue, in the NHL is massive. And there'll be some in the NBA, no question about it. Especially when you get to revenue from gates, and obviously that's something that's, even if they come back and play basketball, there's not going to be fans in the stands. I think we can all agree for that, at least for another 6 months. Most likely at this point. So when you look at that, what's the potential loss of revenue, even if they get those four series in playoffs, best case scenario, let's say they have this, how much revenue will they be losing, and how do you see them, how is that going to impact the finances for next regular season?
Right. So every game that was lost after the middle of March, for the Warriors, it's enormous. I mean, they have an arena that just absolutely, rakes in money. I mean, it's well over $2 million a home date, right? They own concessions, they own everything. They also give these concerts. I mean, what's so interesting, guys, is how different the financial structures are in the league. Like, ironically, the Lakers don't lose as much because they're tenants, right? They don't own any of that stuff. They're just, in their own building. But everyone's got to rebate their local broadcasters, right? Because you got to guarantee 70 games to your regional sports network in the United States. So, if you only had 60, hey, you got to rebate basically 1/7, if you will, of your contract. For teams that have these enormous contracts, that's a lot. Hey, for the Charlotte Hornets, not so much. So I can't give you a full number, but I mean, if we don't have crowds in the fall, that is a major, major hit. These players are going to have to be looking at salaries that resemble nothing like what they're making now. And again, how much stomach do they have for that? And listen, the owner's going to try to take as much as they can. We know that. You don't become a billionaire by not trying to squeeze out every single dollar from your adversary. And for these purposes, they are adversaries. I mean, when they start talking about how that revenue is, how that decreased revenue is going to be split, how a revenue pool that doesn't account for gate, all those things are well over a third of the revenue, it's going to get ugly. Because you're telling players who signed, hey, wait, I signed a contract and you're a billionaire. And now you're telling me I'm going to take less. So you get to enjoy the increased equity. You get to watch your franchise go from $200 million to $2 billion over 20 years. You get to enjoy that. But the minute, the revenue, we hit a pandemic, now all of a sudden I've got to pay for that. So it's a lot of revenue if there aren't fans in the stands. And it's really difficult to quantify. It's an $8 billion league. If there are no fans in the stands for, say, half the season, I mean, that's 16%. I mean, you're talking about losing $1.2 billion. And I'm just doing the math on the back of the napkin. Don't quote me on this. No aggregation, folks. Like sure. I'm just doing literally in my head, right, math. But, imagine losing $1.62 billion in revenue. Who's going to pick that up? Who's left holding the bag?
Kevin, it really seems like from a distance, there's so many things to cover, the now and the later. How is Adam Silver and the owners and the players and the NBAPA kind of negotiating, working on today, which would be to finish this season, get playoffs, but then looking forward to what could be a big change, as you mentioned, next fall and next season?
Yeah, I mean, that's the crazy thing. So I think this season's very much about, hey, can we do this bubble of the logistics? All right, how do we stem the bleeding? Can we get as many games in before? Hey, logistically, how do we do the combine? Can we do the draft before the playoffs? Does that even work? Because teams like to know what they're missing or what they need to do. And then I think the fall is what we just talked about, which is, okay, how do we imagine a league? And by the way, what if Atlanta can have fans but New York can't? How do you then, account for that? Do you not have any home games in New York? Do you put them on the road? Do you fly the Knicks to, I don't know, Portland, Maine? What do you do? And no one's proposed that. I'm just coming up with. I mean, that's one of the things that when I talk to people in the league office, when I talk to owners, when I talk to CEOs, and I've done that because everybody's at home. It's actually great. You can talk to anybody these days. everybody's sitting on their butts, right? Is what they're saying is like, they're playing this parlor game the way you got. Like, I've never seen a time where the biggest, most powerful people in the league, and I don't mean this as a slight on them, I almost give them credit for their humility, which is they don't know. Like they're proposing things. It's not like though they have a, last time there was a global pandemic and we shut down a sports league, we did this. Like, no one is coming from experience, right? They're listening to virologists, they're listening to epidemiologists, some logistics people. But what's so interesting is, whatever cockamamie thing you and I could come up with right now, That's what they're doing. Like, no one's got a template for this. Even the league is utterly confused, and that's no slight on them. Who wouldn't be?
Kevin Arnovitz joins us. Kevin, quickly before we let you go, what's been your thoughts on The Last Dance, 8 episodes in?
I've really enjoyed it, you know. I tend to like documentaries a lot, but what I love is how, you know, episodic it is. I mean, it does feel like you're watching a scripted series. Like, I kept thinking about that. Like, you couldn't write anything this good if you said, hey, let's cover, like, a 17-year career or the tenure of this team. And, you know, I really enjoyed it. Also, you know, I think it's demystified Jordan a little bit. I do think, I mean, I'm early middle age, and so I grew up with this. But it's been fun to kind of watch my younger colleagues, and I feel like everybody's younger than me these days, to sort of have it demystified for them. Like, he was a living, breathing guy who read the newspaper and was, frankly, petty and tormented teammates. I think we've all heard the legends, but I've been so impressed, and I don't know about you guys, like, the access, whatever crew that was that had 20 years ago, it's fantastic. You know, I feel like there are more barriers than ever. Yeah, we get the Instagram stuff, and so we get their every athlete's life is curated now, right? We get this stuff, and we think they know them, but they're just producing this stuff. You don't see the real stuff, right? And that's what's been so, it's like unrefined, those grain, you know, him playing that quarter game with the security guard in the locker room. Like, there are these moments, it's been a wonderful portrait both of, I mean, Jordan, obviously, the team, but also NBA life. Also, I think superstardom. I mean, we would all trade places, but it ain't all roses. And, no. And I think that's been interesting to me as well.
Yeah, I like the scene of Jordan, you know, when he's sitting in his hotel room because he can't even go outside, right? Just waiting. He got nothing to do. I think people never see that side. And some are like, well, I don't care. I would take that because they just think of the money, and that's fine. But day after day, that would get a little tiring. I could see it. And, you know, Jordan was highly competitive. I've been intrigued by, you know, even his own teammate, Steve Kerr's like, yeah, you know what? It actually probably made our relationship better. I think I laugh at some people who think that highly competitive people in highly competitive places aren't every now and then going to snap. It still happens today.
Sure. And I agree with you. You know, I even had a sense of exhaustion as a viewer when he does that elevator ride and they open the door. And it's like, you can't. I mean, that is the, as you said it, like, that hotel room, depressingly enough, is the only refuge in the man's life during that period. And just the sheer exhaustion of just walking through a hotel lobby, something we all take for granted. Again, I don't offer this with any sympathy. I mean, look, I mean, the guy's worth well over $1 billion. And, you know, I think we'd all assume that burden for that sort of compensation. But it is fun. I think the points of view have been really well drawn. I mean, I've enjoyed the Pippen stuff. You know, it's been a fun ride. It's been, you know, frankly, it also couldn't have come at a better time.
touche about that. Kevin, really appreciate your time. It'll be interesting to see what comes with the NBA, because the NHL, they kind of mirror one another. You know, they play in close proximities. You know, they're 80-game seasons. Their playoffs are usually at the same time. They share same stadiums. So it's going to be fascinating. I think either both go or none go. I don't see one sport. Although, you know, the NHL, the only advantage the NHL might have is they could play all 4 hub cities in Canada, where they have lower cases right now. That might be the one advantage.
Yeah, I mean, New York, I just can't even imagine. I mean, I was asking my stepmother's an epidemiologist and the Center for Disease Control, and I was asking her, like, odds that you can get 17,000 people in Madison Square Garden by Thanksgiving, and she's just, are you kidding? I mean, it was just completely incredulous. And that, I think, is the big, like, what is the league going to do long term?
Yeah, that's a great question, Kevin. And I think all of us are like, I'm not sure. So that's what makes it so intriguing.
No one knows.
Thanks so much for your time.
You got it. Take care.